This is Dave Isay, founder of StoryCorps. Our podcast is supported by Cancer Treatment Centers of America, and we've got a message from them coming up right after the show. Stick around.
Hey there, listeners. So there was somebody on Twitter with the handle at Susie Susan, and she recently tweeted about downloading the NPR One app and regretting that she had to hear it 1,000 times from us before she did so. So don't wait like Susie did. Don't have regrets. Find the NPR One app on your app store now. Hi, and welcome to the StoryCorps podcast. I'm Michael Garofalo. We're calling this episode Up to No Good, and it's all about the trouble you stir up as a kid. We'll hear from people who were, by their own admission, lying, thieving, disrespectful children. Sometimes they got away with it, and sometimes they didn't.
I was 13 at the time, so this was 1933. I went into Uncle Jake's room and opened the dictionary, and in the middle of the dictionary was hidden a magazine called Spicy Stories. And Spicy Stories was pictures. I guess it's qualifies as porn, I'm not sure, but it was mostly pictures of naked ladies dressed in jewelry and high heels, and it absolutely was astonishing to me. And I wrote down the name of the publisher, and I wrote to them and said, please, I'm going to be going away to camp this summer, but I would appreciate a subscription, and I would appreciate it if you'd send it in plain covers. It was $1 for a subscription. I sent the $1 and then forgot about it. It was over and done, and I went to camp. And one day I was called in front of the head counselor, who said, this came in the mail for you. And there was Spicy Story.
No plain cover.
No plain cover.
That was Miriam Kirpin, who recorded that interview when she was 85. She spoke with her daughter, Lisa Shufro. This next story also involves a rather exciting cover photograph. It comes from someone named Ollie Neal, who grew up in Arkansas during the 1950s, and he was one of these teenagers who really didn't care much for school. One day during his senior year, he skipped class and ended up wandering into the library. And as he tells his daughter in this interview we're about to hear, he stumbled onto a book written by African-American author Frank Yerby.
I spotted this book that looked rather risque, called The Treasure of Pleasant Valley. On the cover was a drawing of a woman who appeared to be wearing something that was basically see-through, but the symbolism was really great for me at that age of 16. And then I realized if I read the book, two of my classmates, girls, were volunteering in the library. And if they saw me taking out a book, they'd tell the boys. And then my reputation would be down because I was reading books. And I wanted them to know that all I could do is fight and cuss. And so finally it come to me, just steal a book. And so when I finished the book in about a week or two, I brought it back. Right. And when I put it back, that was another book by Frank Yerby. So I thought maybe I'll read that too. So I took it under my jacket and later I brought it back. And that was another book by Frank Yerby. So I took it. And I think that semester I read four books by Frank Yerby. And several years, 13 to be exact, we were at a gathering at my high school for my class reunion. And the teacher who had been the librarian, Mrs. Mildred Grady, was there. She told me that she saw me take that book when I first took it. She said, her first thought was to go over and tell him, boy, you don't have to steal a book. You can check them out. They're free. And then she realized what my situation was, that I could not let anybody know I was reading. So she said that she decided that if a old boy would read a book, she and Mrs. Saunders would drive to Memphis and find another one for me to read. And they would put it in the exact same place where the one I had taken was. And every time I took one out, they headed to Memphis to find another one. Now, you got to understand that this was not an easy matter then, because this is 1957 and 58. And black authors were not especially available, number one. And number two, Frank Yerby was not such a widely known author. And number three, they had to drive all the way to Memphis to find it. And I credit Mrs. Grady for getting me in the habit of enjoying reading so that I was able to go to law school and survive. Mm-hmm.
So that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
That's Judge Ollie Neal with his daughter Karama in Little Rock, Arkansas. In 1991, Neal became the first ever black district attorney in Arkansas. Later, he was elected as a judge and then appointed to the Arkansas Court of Appeals, where he served for 11 years. We're going to hear two more stories now about people whose antics continued into adulthood. The first comes from a retired country doctor in upstate New York. His name is Richard Collins, Dr. Richard Collins. And he was interviewed by his grandson, Sean, who at the time was a medical student at Cornell. And he wanted to know something about his grandfather's education, which started at a small Catholic school.
Sister would go out and ring the bell, and that signified that anybody came in after that bell was late and got a demerit of some kind. That was a chronic problem I had, getting up a little late. And I grew to hate that bell. One time, I stole back to the school and went in the window and stole that bell. And the next day there was hell to pay because somebody had taken that bell. Sister said it was a sin against the school, it was a sin against the sisters, sin against the faith, sin against the Pope. And I know it was such a terrible sin that I no way I could bring the shame on my family to confess that. Of course, sisters came and sisters went. Popes even came and popes went.
And what did you end up doing with the school bell?
I still have it. It's by my bedside, and I joyfully ring it every now and then.
What about as you got older, going through school? A story about you seeing a woman who, I'm not sure if she was a psychiatric patient.
Oh, Mrs. Pepitone. This is when I was a medical student. One of my sisters, for my birthday, gave me a clip-on bow tie that had a red bulb on each side and a wire that went inside your shirt and down to a battery in your pocket. And if you pressed the battery, the tie would glow red. I thought it was a pretty dumb gift, actually, when I got it. But we got a patient in on the floor named Mrs. Pepitone. Her main complaint was that she was full of electricity, and she would tell in this Italian accent, you know, I'm a full of electric. She was a conundrum for everybody. Nobody knew what to do with her. And one day we had rounds, and I thought, I'm going to wear my necktie and see what we can do with Mrs. Pepitone. While they were mulling her case, I suddenly pronounced that, Mrs. Pepitone, I'm going to cure your electric. So I walked over to her and I said, I'm going to put my hand on your forehead. I want you to push out the electric. And the rounding man and the fourth-year student and the intern there, they're all standing there with their mouths open, thought I had gone around the bend. So she pushed and pushed, and I pressed the battery in my pocket, and my necktie lit up, and she says, it's a-going, it's leaving my body. So she was discharged the next day. And the rounding man came up to me privately and he said, I don't think I would tell the professor about that quackery.
That's Dr. Richard Collins, interviewed by his grandson, Sean Collins, in New York City. Finally, we'll hear from three generations of the Wong family. Kay Wong was kind of dragged kicking and screaming to her StoryCorps interview. She was brought by her son, Chung, and her granddaughter, Chen. And as you're about to hear, getting her to talk about anything at all was a challenge. She was 87 at the time, and she had, let's say, a reputation for being strong-willed, something that began when she was a child.
I wasn't very nice. If I make a mistake, my mother, she made me apologize. In our custom, when you apologize to your mother, you have to bring a cup of tea and say, I'm sorry. But I purposely dropped that hot cup of tea on my mother's lap. And I wasn't a good student. I always lie to get out of school because a lot of boyfriend after me. That time I was still young. I was not bad looking then. So what else? Hurry. I'm going to go home.
How'd you meet Grandpa?
I was a training nurse in a hospital. He was there for hemorrhoids operation. So when your grandpa see me, your grandpa keep on asking me to get married. And I said, I don't like you. You have bald headed. I didn't like him because he's ugly. But one thing about your grandpa, he's very smart. That's it. No more questions.
Yeah.
Just a couple more questions?
Short ones.
Tell me about working at Bloomingdale's. What did you do?
You know what I do. I'm not going to tell you.
No, you have to. You have to talk about it.
I am a detective. I got a very famous designer. I better not mention her name. She stole a dress, $3,000. So I walk out the store. I said, would you like to pay me that dress? She said, do you know who I am? I said, yeah, you are a thief. So that's my life.
Do you have any regrets?
No, what should I regret? No, I think I'm old enough to do whatever I would like. And that's it.
That's Kay Wong with her son Chung and her granddaughter Chen. We actually turned this into one of our animated shorts. It's called No More Questions. And there's a follow-up interview in that animation with Chung and Chen that tells you a little bit more about Kay. So if you want more Kay Wong, just head over to StoryCorps.org. That's it for this episode of the StoryCorps podcast. These stories were produced by Vanara Tang, Katie Simon, and me. And as always, you can find out more about the music in this episode on our website. For the StoryCorps podcast, I'm Michael Garofalo. Thanks for listening.
One A is NPR's new daily show inspired by the First Amendment. One A is the news with those who make the news. They have great guests and topical debate, and it's all framed in ways to make you think and engage. Each day, 1A will champion your right to speak freely. Check out 1A with Joshua Johnson from WAMU and NPR on the NPR One app or visit npr.org/podcasts.
Dave Isay again. StoryCorps and our sponsor, Cancer Treatment Centers of America, believe in the transformative power of listening. A national network of 5 cancer hospitals, Cancer Treatment Centers of America practices the art of listening while combining conventional and integrative medical therapies to help patients maintain quality of life during treatment. Learn more at cancercenter.com.